Right now, we're pleased to welcome in District 42, Nebraska State Senator Mike Jacobson for our weekly legislative update. Senator Jacobson, good to see you back in the studio, sir.
Morning, sir.
Hey, great to be back.
Always a pleasure, and we were just talking off the air about a great article that Mr. Van Kampen did in the Telegraph recently about a topic that you're very keen on with microtiff.
Yes, Todd, as usual, had a very informative article, and I thought it really did a great job of kind of outlining how it works and a little bit about TIF in general. And he always does his research and generally always comes back with a really informative article.
Micro-TIF cleanup bill is something we've talked about quite a bit, too. Is that passed the recent legislative session, being picked up by Senator Wayne? And were you on as co-sponsor for that one as well, Senator?
I was. This was a bill that really was always targeted for North Platte. When Senator Groney introduced it, it was really a situation where most of the other senators said, you can't use it in Lincoln or Omaha. It's only for areas outside of the it's but probably something I was up to remember is that Omaha is considered a city of the metropolitan class, and Lincoln is a city of the primary class. They're the only cities in the state that fit those two definitions.
Right.
So then you have first-class cities like North Platte. Then you got second-class cities, which would be those under 5,000. And then you have villages, and then you have unincorporated communities. So basically, it was not you can't use it in cities of the metropolitan class or the primary class. And really, it was targeted out here. I think everyone else is going to do a wait and see. So that's why he was able to get quite a bit of support, because it was really targeted for out here. There were a few issues that needed to be cleaned up. And I would tell you that when I got down there, Senator Wayne came to me and said, look, I picked up the bill, but I guess I need to know, do you want to carry it or not? He said, I've got plenty of other things to do here, so let me know if we want to move it forward. And I said, yeah, we do want to move it forward, but I said, there's some other adjustments that we still need to make to the bill. And so in visiting with the Speaker and with Senator Wayne, we concluded that we're either going to have to pass the bill 1065 the way it was or drop it. And I said, well, there's enough good in the bill to help clean it up. Let's go ahead and move it forward. And so we did move it forward, and we did get 47 yes votes, and which was good. And so my goal is really, in fact, I'm working on it now. I did meet with Trevor Fitzgerald, who's he's legal counsel for the Urban Affairs Committee. And I met with Joe Murray, my LA, and we worked on this a couple weeks ago on the adjustments that I'd like to see made to MicroTIF to really bring it full circle and get it into conformity with the other bills and make it a little more workable. So there's really two things that I wanted to see done. Number one, I'd like to see it pre-funded just like regular TIF is and just like workforce housing TIF is. And I'd also like to get it codified that the city would have the authority to deny one and that they would review all the projects. And I think Todd appropriately pointed out in his article that technically the bill was set up to where it was going to be automatic, and the city council did put a caveat in that they approved it with their oversight. So I'd like to clean that language up as well. The other thing that's still a little bit of a gray area is doing the spot blighting. I know in visiting with Trevor, he's comfortable with the language. I visited with Mike Bacon. He's really not, believes that there's some other tweaks that we need to do in the language to do the spot blighting.
And Mr. Bacon, for those that are unaware, tax increment financing attorney, blessed to have a great partnership with him and close proximity to us as well, living over in Gothenburg.
Correct. And he's worked with us on all of our TIF projects. And so Mike and I had a long discussion about that. And what we're looking at is to make that tweak as well, is to make it abundantly clear that we can go out and do a blight study in a broad area, and then only specifically blight the specific pieces. And so that's the cleanups that I think need to be made. I think it's important that people understand that there's really kind of a family of TIF, if you will. You know, we refer to original TIF. Original TIF is really set up to really help reimburse for cost of the land and the infrastructure. So when you do regular TIF, it's primarily geared to industrial and probably businesses where you're going to buy land, and then you're going to do a bunch of infrastructure work, road work, street, sewer, water, that kind of thing. And that's what you're limited to in terms of what you can spend the proceeds on. So it might limit the size of the TIF bond, because if you don't have enough qualified expenses, you get limited only to that expense. Then we looked at workforce housing. Workforce housing TIF went to the next step and said, because in many cases on workforce housing, there's not as much infrastructure need and the land cost isn't as much, and we're really looking for assistance on the vertical structure itself. So workforce housing allows for you to use it for the vertical part to the extent that you have TIF proceed dollars available. There's also some caveats with workforce housing as to what the home can sell for and then what it can rent for if you're going to rent it out. So then micro TIF really is that third piece. Micro TIF is really geared towards rehabilitation of existing structures, or allowing us to go into areas where those structures are no longer in a state that they could really be rehabilitated cost effectively. So then you could scrape it and send you to scrape it and build new, and you could use it for vertical as well. So micro TIF will work very, very well in several areas. And as the article pointed out, you know, about 60% of the city right now would have homes that would be over 60 years old that would qualify for micro TIF. I think what we have in mind is it would be a lot of areas where you've got really truly run down properties, properties that either haven't been maintained or properties that frankly are just old enough that they're tired.
Sure.
I can tell you when I first came into our plot, I remember having a customer who really specialized in going in and buying out foreclosed properties, and these would generally be old rundown properties. They were on a lot. He would buy the lot and the building for, say, $5,000, and then he would go into the home, and some of these homes he didn't want to show me because they were just, it's like, how can you do anything with this? But by keeping all the sidewalls and the roof and going in and gutting the interior and then reworking the interior, taking some of those small three-bedroom homes and making them two-bedroom homes and making a bigger bathroom and those kinds of things, he would go in and completely rehab it, save all of the wood and everything on the outside. So it'd be all new plumbing, all new electrical, all new windows.
Wow.
And make the house look like new. And he'd be done, and he'd have probably, he might have $50,000, $60,000 in the house when he was done.
Wow.
And then would sell those homes for closer to, $80,000 or $85,000 and make some pretty good money.
Sure.
And very cost-effective home. Well, you think about somebody wanting to do something like that, micro TIF would just be absolutely ideal.
Right.
And it would allow you then to not have to spend the cost for the lumber for that exterior. It would allow you to go into areas of town where homes need to be rehabbed and do that rehab. You've already got the city street there. You've already got the sewer. You've already got the water. So the infrastructure's in place. So that's really where this, I think, fits very, very well. And then it also, if it's really run down, you can scrape that house. Again, you already have the lot.
Yeah.
You have the infrastructure there. Build a new house, do it more cost effectively than if you went out and had to put in a brand new subdivision, brand new lot, and then build a house on it.
And when it comes to micro TIF, Senator Jacobson, I think that this is just another great tool to add into the toolbox.
It absolutely is. It really rounds out, in my mind, the full family of TIF is what I'm calling it.
Yeah.
I coined that as the family of TIF.
Copyright that before the day's over.
There you go.
Again, District 42, Nebraska State Senator Mike Jacobson joining us for our weekly legislative update. Anything else on the legislative side you want to bring up this morning, Senator?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of speculation about will there be a special session, and that continues to be a big question. I don't know. I think there will be. There's a lot of discussion. I know there's work being done right now on a bill. I do get a number of emails from people that are referring to LB 933, which was the bill that was introduced in the legislature. One thing I can tell you is that whatever, if there is a special session and a bill is introduced, it will not be 933 coming back, okay? It will be a different bill. So I know I've had a lot of people refer to, well, I don't like this, I don't like that. I understand that, but understand that it'll be a whole new bill. And the concerns that people had with 933, I can say, will likely not be included in the new bill coming back. if indeed we have one. I know the governor is not going to call a special session unless he feels that there's a consensus among the senators that we have a bill that they can support.
933 is completely dead. That's gone. It's not coming back. So I'm glad that you reiterated that, Senator Jacobson. And yeah, we're waiting for that special session possibly, but first things first, we're short a member of the Nebraska legislature, so we're kind of waiting on that shoe to fall right now.
Yeah, we are. In fact, I have to say I'm a little surprised that the governor hasn't made his selection to replace Senator or now Congressman Flood. Mm-hmm. I know he had required, I think it was back the 8th of July, was a deadline for people in that district to submit applications to be interviewed, and the process is pretty simple. You do the applications, he does the interviews, and then makes a selection.
As you know from personal experience, it's a pretty expedited process.
In my case, it was a very expedited process because we were in the middle of a legislative session.
Thankfully, we don't have to worry about that right now, but
that is true.
As expedited as your process.
That is true, and I can tell you whoever he selects won't be faced with the same challenge that I was.
We're not going to toss him onto a treadmill going 80 to 100 miles an hour and ask him to keep pace.
But that is definitely the case when you talk about jumping onto a train that's going full speed.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Let's talk a little bit about your working relationship you had with now Congressman Flood and your thoughts on him now going up to Capitol Hill.
Well, I'm not surprised. He was really geared for that. Obviously, Congressman Flood had been in the legislature before and was term limited. I think he gave serious consideration to running for governor after he was term limited. And his wife, I believe, was diagnosed with cancer. And to tell you the caliber guy he is, when that happened, he said, and he was a very popular, he was the speaker of the legislature when he term limited out.
Youngest speaker in our state's rich history.
Correct. That's correct. And very popular, I think would have had a real shot, in the gubernatorial race.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he, his wife was diagnosed with cancer, and he said, I need to be with my wife and my family, which was the right call, and so he stepped down and did not run, and then he came back and ran for the legislature again and came back into the legislature. I think one thing, a lot of those who were term limited out and came back and ran again, to the person of all, told me that the legislature is a different place than it was when they were term limited before.
Different animal.
It is a different animal, and term limits have definitely made things different. One thing I found is there are not a lot of people that are in the legislature that it's a stepping stone. They're looking to spend some time in the legislature. In fact, some are not even going the full 8 years until they throw their hat in the ring to go do something else. I think that's one thing that people can be assured of in my case is that I don't plan to run for another elected office. I ran for the airport authority and worked on fixing our air service, and then now running for the legislature. And my focus is going to be on District 42 and what we can get done here. But I have no interest in jumping ship from that seat, and I don't have any interest in any other elected office. I think this is a good fit for me and one that I want to dedicate my time to.
With that being said, though, Senator Jacobson, you're very open to appointments, we've learned, too. Served on the CRA for a number of years, still serve on the hospital board. You might not be planning to run for any other offices, but you're still open to appointments, right?
Well, I'm going to continue to help where I can in other boards, but it's not like I'm looking to run for Congress or run for governor or anything like that. I'm having all the fun I can stand here, but
I like the way you put that. I understand.
But there are a lot that use this as a stepping stone and a learning experience, too, and I think it's a great learning experience. I think about not only Congressman Flood, but our great speaker of the Nebraska legislature with Mike Hilgers, possibly soon to be Attorney General Hilgers, too. And what a great learning experience it is for those gentlemen to have that background in the Nebraska legislature. It's great for Nebraska, and it's great for them as well.
That's really true, and it can be a real learning experience. And I know several of my colleagues, when I got down there, were glad that I had been around a while and had some business experience, because it's one thing that seems to be lacking as we get some of the younger people in the legislature today. that are looking to move on to that next step. Maybe don't have quite the perspective that would be helpful. And
yeah, they just don't have the life experience in some cases.
That's been the big issue. And so bringing some of that balance, I think, has really been helpful. And, you know, it's just like with TIF, there's probably only three of us in the legislature who really have a pretty good working knowledge of how TIF works. And it's because unless you've been exposed to it, you know, I spent 23 years chairing the CRA and feel like I kind of know it inside and out. And so being able to have that background and be able to come in and hopefully educate others as to how it really does work and here's the things that we need to do to fix it has been helpful. And so again, I'm really focused on the idea that there's just a lot of things that we can do together down there to really make a good outcome, and I'm still very focused on the idea that I don't think that the rural Nebraska's really gotten a fair shake along the way, and including District 42, and so there's things we need to do to continue to make sure that we get our piece of the pie, and there's things that can be done to really help us become more prosperous and really help the prevent more of the drain of people leaving this area of the state and moving east.
Senator Jacobson, a more positive news. It's fair time throughout the entire state, including here in the 42nd Legislative District. I'm sure you're excited for the opportunity to get out and enjoy the nice heat and some of the 4-H's in the area.
Well, you're reading my mind. My newspaper article this week is focusing on the fair and focusing on 4-H and really the remarkable organization that 4-H is and really all the work that goes into putting a fair on, everything from the Ag Society to the University Extension personnel to all the 4-H leaders all pulling together and then all these students that are involved and these youth that are involved in 4-H. You know, I was a 4-H'er myself. My wife was a 4-H'er. My kids were in 4-H. And I can tell you, when you start looking at some of the social issues that we deal with in this country, 4-H has really ballooned in terms of an organization. It's the largest youth organization out there. And thank God they're there. I mean,
amen.
You look at the skills, the life skills that they teach and the work ethic that they can expose kids to. Boy, what a great opportunity to keep these kids busy, keep them focused, keep them doing the things that we want to see them do to make them really better citizens in the future. So my hat's off to everyone who's working hard. You know, Lincoln County Fairs this week, I did outline when all the other county fairs are. You know, there's six of them now. So there's a lot of opportunities to go to fairs here over the next couple of months.
And encourage your constituents, too, if they see you at the fair or out and about, walk up, say hello, and if they've got any legislative issues they'd like to talk about, they could certainly have that conversation with you there. And if they'd like to go deeper than just a quick conversation, they could certainly set something up with you or your legislative staff.
Absolutely. I really enjoy the opportunities that when I bump into people in different parts of town and they've got a question or they got a comment, and I've already received a couple of ideas for bills. I did have an individual reach out to me, and in fact, we are working on pulling a bill together on this that it would eliminate the need for the front license plates on vehicles. And as you know, the way it's set up right now, your license plates, some vehicles don't even have a place for a front license plate. And so the law, the way it reads right now, is you're not required to have a front license plate if your vehicle isn't set up to have one. But then you're required to spend $50 and get a sticker that goes in your windshield.
Right.
Well, this individual is a former law enforcement officer who said, you know, the front license plates are a waste anyhow, because when they're driving towards you and you're driving towards them, you're not going to see that front license plate. He said, what happens is you read the back license plate because you get in behind the person where you can read it. And so he felt like that the state could save some money by not building that second license plate, and the consumer could save some money by not having to spend $50 for that sticker that really doesn't work anyhow. So it's those kinds of common sense ideas that I think really generally come from the public, and they go to their elected officials and they say, hey, why can't we do this? And so I've already had Joe do some research, and evidently there's 20 other states that do not require a front license plate.
Yep.
And so we're probably going to look at that.
Most of them east of us, but that's true.
And yeah.
They never have.
Yeah.
I just had a nephew that ran into the issue of his new vehicle. He got a Mustang.
Yep.
didn't have a place to put a front plate.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And they were trying to figure that out. And it cost him more than $50 to have a bracket made that mounted to the frame underneath.
I can't imagine.
And my wife had a vehicle at one point in time. It was a Solstice, and it didn't have a bracket for the front license plate. And then she ultimately got pulled over and cited and had to put a bracket on it. Well, now the law did get changed a few years ago to where you didn't have to put a bracket on. You could go without a front plate, but you had to put a sticker in your windshield, and it was $50 for the sticker, where it would have been cheaper to have had the license plate if you had the bracket. So that didn't seem to make sense, and I think from what I'm hearing from at least this one law enforcement officer, former law enforcement officer, is that really doesn't fix the issue, you're probably better off just to have a back license plate that you can see and probably save everybody some money.
What with them? Well, Senator Jacobson, if folks want to get in contact with you directly, if they don't want to just risk bumping into you out and about, how can they get in contact with you and set something up, sir?
Well, the best way is to go through my legislative office. Again, the phone number down there is area code 402-471-2729. And then, of course, my email, legislative email, is mjacobson with an O at leg.ne.gov. And again, it's mjacobson with an O. Because there is a Mary Jacobson that spells her name with an E in. And so she gets a few of my emails, and I get a few of hers. And of course, my daughter is Mary Jacobson with an O, but she's not on the legislative staff. But she's recently been married and changed her, so now she has her husband's name, Vagalus, so I don't have that problem anymore. Now I just need to remember that when I get an email from Mary Vagalus, that's my daughter, and I'm not scratching my head saying, do I know this person?
Yeah, and what a blessing, too. You made a new friend down at the Nebraska legislature, too. So
that's correct, and she's really a nice gal, and we chuckled a lot.
Exchange emails a lot.
Oh, well, early on, it was kind of an interesting problem, but she would come by snickering and say, oh, by the way, I've got one of your emails, or I printed this out for you, and so thank you.
What a blessing. Make a new friend down there at the Capitol.
That's correct.
Senator Jacobson, as always, we appreciate the time, appreciate the great work you're continuing to do in the quote-unquote downtime for the Nebraska legislature. Wow. Look forward to seeing you again next Monday, sir.
Thank you very much, guys.